What's up, guys? This is Chris Pappas with Court Prowess Basketball, and you're listening to the Coach D Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, near or far, high or low, you're listening to the Coach D Podcast. And listeners, I'm super excited, super hyped to have this guest in the studio with me today. But without further ado, let's get the music rolling and introduce this high-level guest the right way. Listeners, stepping on the court, we have a maestro of skill development, a master of player development as well, and a true game changer in the world of hoops. With a passion of unlocking the full potential of every player he comes across as a I'm Possible skill enhancement trainer, he brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the court with a unique approach to skill acquisition that blends old school fundamentals with cutting edge methodology. From ball handling to shooting, he's transformed the game of countless players, helping to reach new heights and excel on the hardwood. Today, we're going to be delving deep into his journey, exploring his introduction into the sport of skill training, and discovering the secrets behind his success. Listeners, please give a warm welcome to Coach Chris.
Thank you for that. That was an awesome intro. I might have to use that somewhere.
Oh, for sure, Coach. I mean, just before we even get started, one, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on the Coach D Podcast. And just before we just delve into skill acquisition fundamentals, you know, some of the players that you train, just talk to us, Coach. How was your physical and how was your mental?
Physically, it's always a process when you get over 30, but it's great because, you know, just being in the training world, I'm always pushing myself to, one, stay in the best shape I possibly can to keep up with the young ones, and number two, I'm still learning as a trainer and especially just as a player and a lover of basketball. Like, I'm trying to continue to learn the things that I'm teaching, so from a physical standpoint, definitely I try to keep my body and everything in shape to keep up with the times and really understand what I'm teaching. It's one of my passions is not only teaching it, but also being able to do it myself.
Right.
It kind of pushes me and continues to give me an edge in terms of continuing to progress my training and my understanding perspective of the game. Mentally, I'm in a great place too. Right now I've got a lot of gym time and I got a ton of clients that I'm working with. So just a little bit busy, a little bit all over the place, but mentally in a really great place as my company moves into the springtime. So very exciting stuff.
That's what's up, Coach, man. You just continue to keep up the hard work. And that's just something that really stood out to me in terms of, you know, because on Instagram and I can only say, especially for players, there's so much now that players can learn in the game of basketball compared to 10, even 15 years ago. And one thing that really popped out to me, just from my perspective, was just the intensity of your demonstrations. But two, you're really teaching those small details and how they apply to game scenarios and in different game situations. So for yourself, Coach, like, before you even became the high-level skills trainer that you are, kind of just take us through a journey of, you know, how you started getting involved in basketball. Like, who was that person who put a basketball in your hands? Or if it wasn't a person, where was you when you came across basketball for the very first time?
Definitely for the first time, my mom would be the one that drove me into the sports world.
Nice, so
a high sports background. My grandfather, 92 to this day, is glued to the March Madness in any bathroom.
I love it.
That's probably where I got my push. And I can remember I think signing up for, like, you know, after school basketball program, in which just I started falling in love with the game pretty much right after that. So I'd have to give the edge to my mom, you know, just pushing me into, you know, getting into sports really early. I mean, and then from there, it was just, you know, I couldn't get enough of really any sport growing up.
Nice. I just, out of curiosity, what area did you grow up in? Are you, so you're East Coast, right?
East Coast, yep. I was born in New Jersey, but moved to right outside of Baltimore, Maryland, a little bit north of Baltimore, Maryland. about when I was two or three. So I've been in the Maryland, Harford County, technically area for a little over 30 years now.
Wow. Okay. And just in terms of, I mean, when you look at skills training, I mean, there's very few and far between, you know, trainers who really not just teach the skill acquisition, but the detail. Yourself, I'm Possible Trading definitely does a great job of that as well. So can you just share your journey on what led you to become a skill enhancement trainer with I'm Possible Training?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I'd like to say that I started somewhat of my coaching career back in 2008, which is when I graduated high school. One of my coaches, he started his own camp in the summer. So he asked a lot of the older guys to come back and help him work his camp.
Right.
You know, where I started kind of getting my feet wet into, you know, just coaching a team during the week, running a ball handling station, in which, you know, I worked for pretty much every year since that year. But what really led me down to this skill enhancement road is, number one, during those camp times, you know, you'd have 3 or 4 weeks and we're talking 20 minute stations times eight.
Wow.
So doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, you know, the stationary ball handling drills, ball wraps, that type of thing got
right.
Very, very boring. So that's where I got a taste of, let me see how I can kind of not rework the wheel, but just like add some stuff that's going to make it more engaging for me personally, just so I can get through the day. And number two, just so the kids that were coming back to us also had, you know, some new material, some fresh stuff that they can work on, where they're becoming more engaged as we progress and not, we're just doing the same thing over and over again. And then you can fast forward a few years later, after I graduated college, that same coach, you know, was kind of begging me and kind of forcing me into taking the JV head coaching role, at his school. So I didn't have much going on and I was like, all right, let me see. I never really looked at myself as a coach. Always just a player, always like just loved playing the game. I didn't really have too much of a passion for teaching it. But I took that role just to kind of give it a go. I was doing that for 2 years and I quickly found out that, you know, before I could install offenses and plays and everything like that, like my freshman and sophomore players that I had, they needed to learn how to actually move as basketball players.
There we go.
You know, gain the abilities to dribble and use their footwork and that type of thing. So
right.
In the off season, especially during the season too, I was trying to find ways to, how can I quickly get them, you know, to a position where they can move and they understand how to actually pivot all those little things that, you know, you don't really think of when you're running an offense, but
right.
If players can move correctly, it's going to be really tough for those plays to actually be successful, because ultimately those, you know, players need to have the ability to do what you want them to do, not just know what they're doing. So that's what put me into a position where I started really focusing on how can I get players better. And then I'd also ran into that same situation, where I started my company, Court Prowse Basketball. When I started training players on the side, it became a thing where I was kind of doing the same things over and over and over again. Where I was like, I need to find something that I can, you know, add just a little bit more engagement, add a little bit more, because I had always felt there was something missing.
Right.
And luckily, I stumbled upon Micah Lancaster's footwork. I think the first YouTube video I saw, one of them was him working out Kyrie Irving at Duke. So that caught my attention. And pretty much ever since that day, I was locked into some of the things that he was doing, just from an outsider perspective. And I was like, man, this is really cool. I started kind of working on some of the things that he broke down online, and finally had the opportunity to get certified back in 2018. And ever since then, you know, I've seen the game from a whole different perspective and how much I was missing, even my, you know, way back in my playing days, but then also as a coach as well, some of these things that, like, I don't know how any player plays the game of basketball without, like, knowing, understanding, or working on.
Right. See, and that's the biggest thing I think I've learned as a coach, and you just really spoke about it, just in terms of not just teaching players what to do, but I think the most important two key components is how to do it, but why you do it as well. And especially in today's day and age, you know, information is available everywhere. So when it comes to skill acquisition coach, how do you approach that? And, you know, how would you approach skill acquisition and development in basketball?
Yeah, for sure. So I like to think about it as the skill enhancement side of the game, in which I take care of now fully, is essentially just a way to fill the gaps between what players are getting at a team practice, what teams maybe, or what players might be getting on their own playing basketball, just pick up, or what they might be working on with more of a game situational coach. So when a player comes to me, I'm not necessarily worried about the situations of the game, but I want to focus on a player's characteristics, how they move their body, their timing, their technique, and then their discipline that they have also within their skill set, their footwork, their ball handling. So when a player comes to me, I'm just trying to make them the best basketball player they can possibly be. So that way, when they get to their team, or they, you know, get to their high school team, AAU team, they can have a bigger impact, play a bigger role, and ultimately those coaches feel that they have utmost confidence in them to play, you know, any position or be thrown into any situation within the game.
Understood. Understood. And even when you're teaching those skills, is there any methods or principles that you prioritize when you're teaching those skills?
The biggest thing, and it's more of an idea, because there's so many different routes that we could go down in terms of, you know, the skills that are most important.
True.
One of the things is you can think about is skill builds skill. So the more skill you acquire, the easier it is for you to acquire another skill or work on skills that you might not have been so strong with. But a big thing that changed the way that I look at the game and process training is there's not necessarily rights and wrongs or a clear-cut starting point. Rather, it's what's the most efficient ways that you can do something? And then there's obviously no rights and wrongs in that. So there's 5-6 different ways you can cross the basketball over, probably more than that. But each one is going to be similarly important. So understanding what you're working on, why you're working on it, how to work on it, and then try to attack that at all angles in terms of the accountability, so that when you cross the basketball over, you're in a game, depending on how much space you have, depending on what that defender might be doing, depending on the situation or what shot you're trying to, you know, progress into, your body's able to respond with the correct solution within that moment. So not training with rights and wrongs rather than options and solutions. And that puts a lot of pressure off of a player trying to really grow their game, because at that point now they're not guessing on what they're working on. They know exactly what they're working on.
Right.
And they can attack that head on.
Right. Right. And that's just, man, and this is where you just highlighted it so beautifully, just in terms of there really is no right and wrong. You know, how you teach one player shooting or passing might be slightly different to how you teach it with another player. So when it comes to drills, and I really understand that it's not, and I'm starting to learn as a coach, it's not a question of the best drill. It's just more, what ideas or concepts have you found when it comes to ball handling and even shooting that you found quite effective with your players, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. In terms of ball handling, just some of the main, it's kind of understanding the techniques involved. So
right,
when
right.
you watch, when let's just take, for example, like a simple, if you're going to start at the top of the key and you have a defender on you, the most simple play in basketball is to drive past them without a crossover, without right. any type of manipulation of the ball. But within that, you can break down the types of dribbles that you need. So when a player starts with me, I'm gonna probably start with what we call a pocket dribble, where you're gonna pull the basketball and manipulate that basketball to the hip,
right.
Where your fingertips are facing outward, your elbows ultimately getting behind the basketball, where you have a slight pause moment where you can start to make decisions, and then off of that, if you're in a good running stance, we call it a drop stance, so short wide stance. Your first step is then you're gonna also need to learn how to straight pound the basketball. So you have a pocket pound, which is gonna put you into a good position to drive forward. You're gonna have a straight pound dribble. That ball's gonna need to hit aggressively, and right before that first step you take, let's just say ball's in your right hand, that first step we're gonna teach taking that step with your left foot right now. You're gonna take a step with that left foot. That ball needs to hit before that foot hits. so that you have the correct timing and you have that quickness to actually take your second step with that ball side foot, so you're not waiting on the basketball. The ball is in rhythm with you. And then off of that, then we have, you know, when you pick the basketball up, that type of thing. But let's just say those two dribbles are you know, what we're working on technique-wise.
Right.
There's any other ones that we can throw in. So the pocket dribble, going back to your question, I know I'm rambling a little bit. Going back to your question.
You good, Coach? You good?
I can just, these ideas pop in my head. I could talk about the skills of the game at nauseam. But,
right, right.
So you're talking about our pocket dribble, the drop position, and then a straight pound in that dribble step are probably the three biggest things that players will struggle with that are holding them back massively. So without those things, it's going to be really tough to play the game of basketball at a high level consistently. So there's times where you can get away with not having those things in order. But without them, I just see a lot of players are guessing, and you can really kind of tell which players are in understanding of that when you just watch simple layup lines before a game.
Right, like, sure.
Yeah, their timing's there, or are they stuttering their feet to right. go to the layup? Or are right. they in – those are things that you know, you can pick out right away once you understand those details.
Right, right. And even just with some of those players that you work with, like from your perspective and your assessments over the years, what separates, just in terms of, you know, players who excel from those who struggle in terms of skill development, what would you say separates those players?
It's the mindset, and consistency is the biggest thing.
Okay.
So what I mean by that, well, one, the mindset is just understanding that you're always evolving, you're always becoming, is one thing. So not feeling like you have everything figured out. You know, even today in the way that I, you know, train myself and stuff, like I feel like I'm way far off of my full potential still, regardless of how long I feel like I've been doing this.
Love that.
The mindset of players coming in and just wanting to learn and wanting to be critiqued and wanting to just get into uncomfortable situations where they may not be making all the shots, or they may not feel like they're even good at basketball in that moment, is going to separate them. And then also the consistency. So I have a lot of players that will work with me, and they'll work with me for, you know, several months. And once they're done training with me, or if I see them like at the gym, you know, by themselves, they're just kind of going back into just shooting around, not really working on the stuff we worked on. So it's just, it'd be tough for them to really continue to grow and take their game to where they want to take it. If they're not diving and really investing in being organized with themselves and I guess true to themselves and really want to know how good or how bad you are at the game.
Right. You see, and this is like another thing that, it's a question that I got asked back in like 2008. And even now I'm really trying to figure out, in terms of players having that competitive edge, is it something that you can be born with or something that you can learn from others? So I would say for yourself, Coach, what elements contribute most to giving players that competitive edge when they're on the court?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that edge can develop in players differently. So everyone's going to be a little bit unique. Some players are born with it. Some players, I think it helps them being around other players like that, where they can push themselves. I have like a great example is I started training. You've probably seen him on my Instagram feed a good bit. His name is RJ.
Oh yes, sir. Yep.
He does a lot of the crazy cool stuff. Yep. You know, because he's got some little bit extra athletic ability built into him right now. But he came to me as a freshman in high school and was pretty much a gym rat with me ever since that point. And you know, we took his game from being just completely out of control to a very well put together player. Unfortunately, he missed his senior year, but through that process of COVID, he was able to get into the gym with some of my younger guys. Then now they're actually just finishing up their first year as a ninth grader in high school. He was able to work with them a ton during COVID, in the same group, And I think he rubbed off on both of them in terms of just how to prepare, how to, you know, go through a workout and going 100%, but also, you know, learning how to fail and learning how to really just push yourself to grow and get better. Right. So I think it's definitely the people that you surround yourself with, and kind of how you're really brought up in the game, right, as well. So, you know, if you're a player that, you know, is told you're really, really good, but don't really train, and you put up points and win a ton of AAU games and travel games, you might feel pretty good, to the point where, you know, you're not really pushing to that next level. And then, you know, once you meet adversity for the first time, or you step into the gym in a real training environment where you're being pushed and not just patted on the back, right. I see a lot of players, you know, shy away from that, and ultimately that kind of hurts their career.
See, and that's just something you've spoken on, which I found super interesting nowadays. And I think this conversation has really stirred up more, I think, during the NCAA, just in terms of some players might not be getting the right playing time, so they go into the trade portal, then they get transferred to another program. And you just highlight something there that's super key in terms of learning how to fail. You know, I think even for me as a coach, when I'm demonstrating certain things, I need to highlight that, you know, even though I made this layup, I'm not expecting you to make it every single time, but I'm just here to teach you the principles, the techniques, the teaching points, so that eventually you can get there. Like, because learning at times does look ugly, you know, so especially in the gym, you're not always going to have the perfect form or fluidity. So for yourself, coach, why did you mean that in terms of when you're teaching players, not just skill, you're teaching them learning how to fail? Why did you mean that?
For sure. So one is, in terms of the skin, within the skill enhancement perspective, learning how to fail is necessary, because a lot of the things that we're going to teach, or a lot of the things that we're going to work on with players of all levels, all ages, what we're working on is going to be very new for some players, in a sense that they've never actually focused on it. They've never actually worked on it before.
Right, right.
So there's they have no business being able to do it, you know, after one or two reps. It might take 100 reps, but once you feel it one time being correct, that's something now your body has started to process, and it becomes more of like a procedural memory where your brain stores it, and that's something that you can oftentimes go back to and do it again and do it again. And do it again. And then as you start adding more skills and you start to be more consistent with what you're working on, that becomes something you can continue to master. So being able to fail is just going to help you, one, progress to get that one rep up and going 100% effort and hitting all the details rather than going half speed and you know, maybe checking the box of making the layup. All good, but all those little details kind of go unnoticed or kind of accomplished throughout that process. And then number two, the game's not perfect.
So sure.
The game of basketball is very imperfect. So our ability through a training session to continue to push and push and get to that next rep, not only on a mindset, but also when you make a mistake in the game doesn't stop for you. You're going to need to continue to drive through an imperfect moment, right? And a lot of guys you see look very smooth all the time, but you can kind of tell maybe they tripped, maybe this, that, the other thing. Your ability to adapt in those situations is a huge skill in itself. So I don't need to be perfect, but can I make it to the outer world look perfect? So those moments in training where we're making mistakes are really good lessons for us to understand what we're doing wrong and how we can continue to correct those by ourselves.
Right.
And within.
Right. And one thing, because, you know, for me as a student of the game, one skill that I've learned, which has definitely changed over the years, just in terms of, I think, you know, moving into that topic of, you know, the old school teaching points versus the new school teaching points. You know, the old school would say, or at least when I was taught how to shoot, my feet needed to be square to the basket, you know, elbow here, and then shoot. Versus now, you know, you look at the likes of Coach Mike Dunn and some of the other coaches. Shout out to Coach Peter Wozniak, just how they're teaching shooting is really revolutionary because it's simple, it's effective, and it's universal. It does that everyone can pick it up and understand it. So for yourself, coach, I feel like there's a constant battle with coaches at times. Like, how do you balance incorporating old school teachings with newer principles in your training approach?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting subject. And really, when you look at old school to the new school teaching, a lot of the same principles, a lot of the same objectives are there. However, sure. You know, with time, technology changes. Same way with the skill enhancement training or just training in general. We have so much video highlights, like high level, like,
right.
You know, videos you can go grab on Instagram of some of these guys that, you know, shoot consistently.
Right.
And so you're really able to dive into the details more so than ever. So with that is going to come more details in turn. And with that is also going to become, you know, more methods to actually get what you want, you know, for a player to do or take from a player that you're watching in such, you know, crystal clear HD. So what we try to do in terms of the old school, new school is, like, old school, we just want to fill in as many gaps as they kind of left there. We don't want to feel like players are guessing at what they need to do. There's obviously with shooting, there's a checklist of like 4 to 5 things that you would want to, you know, be as a shooter or technique wise that you would want to work on as a shooter.
Right.
However, there are little nuances that what people were being taught to nowadays, what we can actually see some of the greatest shooters doing,
right.
Might be just a little bit different. The objective is still the same, is to be consistent, and make a ton of shots. But we're finding out that, a lot of players are still, you know, if those methods were, you know, perfect, everybody would be the greatest shooter in the world. So that's
true.
We have to try and take a step back and figure out, all right, what's holding this player back, right?
Right.
One of the biggest things is the elbow tucked. For the longest time, you know, I would teach and, you know, try to keep the L, try to keep everything straight. Well, the problem with that is everybody's body is going to be a little bit different. So, you know, just because your elbow's bowed just a touch isn't the end of the world. However, we're trying to figure out something that's comfortable for you, something that your body can actually process or, you know, absorb, but at the same time, be effective and repeatable.
Right. Right. And the beauty about just teaching and coaching, and this is one thing that I had to learn, is as a coach, don't change what you say, change how you say it, because you're dealing with players very differently. Just like you said, in terms of shooting, it might not always be that plain and simple because everyone's bodies are completely different from one to the next. So for yourself, when you're working with players, how do you tailor your training to their individual strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in terms of strengths, weaknesses, usually every session I'll have something that's going to challenge the player or essentially test where a player's skill level is at with that particular ability.
Right.
So we'll start with something that may be challenging, and I'm hoping, and normally I'll find it, what is causing a player to fail through that process. Whether it be ball handling or some type of shooting workout with their footwork, is trying to identify one, maybe two weaknesses a session, and then try to figure out how we can continue to make that stronger. So I won't tailor a workout towards a player's strengths. If they're coming to me, we're going to try to figure out what you're bad at, and try to find solutions to improving that part of your game.
Right.
And along the way, obviously, a lot of those strengths will continue to get stronger when you start to add more angles or more pieces to the puzzle there.
Right. And in your opinion, coach, how important is this, something that I think at times gets really neglected. And it was super cool. Just the other day, shout out to Coach Coleman by any means basketball. He just finished in London doing a two-day camp. And one thing that I really loved was at the end of the two-hour workout, he sat the players down and started to tackle the mental side, just in terms of like, what's the conversations you have in your head when you're nervous versus when you're confident? When you get subbed out, does your head go down? Are you thinking, man, like, I made a mistake, now the coach is going to pull me out? Just really highlighting the mental side and just giving players strategies to keep them focused and locked in. So for yourself, coach, in your opinion, how important is mental conditioning in skill development and overall player performance?
No, absolutely. I think it's very important for both the skill enhancement training and just as an athlete and for performance as a whole. Is start with the skills training part of it. Again, we kind of go back to your mindset. Understanding like, all right, what I'm doing is not meant to be easy. You know, so there's times you can get frustrated if you're working really hard on something. Like, it's okay to be frustrated, but we don't want that frustration to ultimately hinder your ability and your focus and your intent on what you're working on.
All right.
So a lot of times in my sessions, and you know, players might be struggling or you know, missing every single shot, and they start to get down on themselves and they start to, you know, exert energy in areas that aren't going to necessarily help them. And I just try to remind them, or at least give them the feedback of like, I don't know if you've read the book, it's called The Inner Game of Tennis, where nothing is good, nothing is bad. And that's where you want to try to live in as much as possible, where if you're making all the shots and the second you start to think, man, this is really good, you know, that could hinder your focus. If you're missing a lot of shots,
okay,
you continue to miss and miss and miss. And now you're just getting madder and you're digging yourself a hole.
Right.
If you don't have a good and you don't have a bad, there's nothing to compare it to, which is a little tricky in skill enhancement because we want players to feel the bad,
yes,
and acknowledge it so that they have a reference point of when they do it correctly. But when it gets to the point of just in terms of performing maybe a shooting workout where they're, you know, trying to make a ton of shots and, you know, they're just getting their reps up, it's trying to stay in that lane of, no, nothing good, nothing bad. And that we want that to translate into the performance side too, where if you're thinking something's good or you're thinking something's bad, you're given that opportunity for either doubt or, you know, getting a little bit overconfident in your head, kind of get in there where you just want to be in that what they call the zone.
Yes,
where you're just playing and you're not really thinking about the outcomes. It's just you're letting your body, your training, your work just kind of take over and you're just free flowing and having fun.
Right. I love that. That's a really cool concept. Could you just repeat that reference? You said it was from a tennis book, you say, coach?
It was called The Inner Game of Tennis. I forget the author.
Inner Game of Tennis. Okay.
Really, really great book. It's based around the game of tennis, but the similarities and the everything works for just about any sport.
Love that. I'm definitely going to have to add that to my wish list on Amazon now. I love it.
For sure.
I love it. And I mean, you even just highlighted it there, coach, in terms of advice for players when it comes to learning skill. But just even on that, is there any other advice that you would give to aspiring basketball players looking to improve their skills and just reach that next level?
Yeah, for sure. Couple of things. One is just be intentful with everything that you do.
That's key.
Have a plan. Understand what it is that you're working on, what you want to work on, and how you're going to attack that each week, each month, each year, so that you're not guessing and, you know, you're not leaving things up to chance. And then balance. There's got to be a balance of everything within the game of basketball. So you can't just do the skill training and hope that, you know, you become, you know, a high IQ player without actually playing the game. So you need to find ways to continue to play the game, play pickup,
yes.
Learn from your coaches, team practices, that type of thing. And then also have a sense of your athletic performance work, what your body needs, and, you know, getting quicker, stronger, faster in terms of just the weight room And then, you know, you're also talking about nutrition. So being as balanced with all those things as possible. And that way you can start to learn like what you really need to get to that next level. Everybody's got things that they're really good at. Everybody's got things that they're, you know, need to improve at. So understanding those things and trying to become as well-rounded in all facets of the game is key.
Absolutely. And it's so crazy because I was just listening to a podcast. It's the new LeBron James and JJ Redick podcast, Mind the Game. And they were just talking about just how the game has evolved, you know, and you just highlighted it rather in terms of especially players that are coming up now. You need to be well-rounded. You can't just be that lights out shooter unless if you're in a team that just needs that, then fine. But kind of just to give yourself longevity just in terms of, you know, being in that starting lineup or coming off the bench or just being an all-round contributor, you have to read the game well. Passing, shooting, dribbling, everything needs to be at quite a high level. So saying that, would you say the demands of up-and-coming players are much more higher than it was back then, or is it more or less the same?
Yeah, let me just, I actually listened to that podcast this morning.
Nice.
LeBron and JJ. So growing up, JJ Redick was my guy. He's my favorite basketball player ever. Just throw that out there. Shout out to old man in the three. But I listened to that this morning and they did kind of touch on, I think JJ asked LeBron, like, can he tell when players get to the league if they're going to stick around for a long time?
Yes.
And it was kind of just LeBron kind of just, I can't remember exactly what the words were, but he said he just kind of, the player would just take in everything, the criticism,
yes,
the bat, and not shrug it off or, you know, not think he knows everything, because that's you know, a quick way to be in and out of something. So
right.
Going back to your question, could you repeat that question that you had?
Oh, for sure. Because, I mean, if we look at when JJ Redick was getting into the league and just being that up-and-coming player, he was extremely great at being a great catch and shoot, coming off screens. Whereas now, in today's day and age, you can't just be that catch and shoot player. You kind of need to be well-rounded in other areas, maybe off the dribble. You need to be a defensive player, need to pass and shoot and dribble at a pretty good level. So would you say now the demands in terms of skill acquisition for upcoming players is that much more higher than it was back then, where it was just more about, we just need you to be this one role player?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think, well, when you think about it, you know, growing up, and if you're making it to that high of a level, like, the demand was already there.
Right.
The problem is that all the teaching and all the you know, the evolution of the game and the world of trainers just wasn't quite where it's at right now. So I think that demand was still there because you still have players that grew up averaging 40 points a game, and then they get to the league and they're going to have to kind of tailor their game to the roles that they're playing. So I think there's definitely a demand for more well-rounded basketball players in terms of skill. Because I think at some point, every basketball player had to have some type of impact on both ends of the floor, and, you know, had some type of skill where they can get by to be impressive enough to get to that next level, or skilled enough to get to that ultimate level.
Right.
So I think more than ever, the demand of becoming a highly skilled basketball player is there because, you know, guys are coming into the league at 18, 19 years old, and, you know, they have their individual games figured out.
Yes.
And now, sure, it becomes 3, 4, 5 years later, like a Jason Tatum, where, like, now he's becoming a little bit more higher IQ type of guy, who now you give him that IQ and you give him that skill set that he's been working on for years and years and years, that becomes, you know, very dangerous as a player. So you growing up and playing basketball, you're going to have to take care of those things early on to become the most skilled player you can be, at the very least. But I would say that the pressure shouldn't be felt if you're working correctly, because there's so much information out there for everything.
Sure.
You know, you can get on YouTube and Instagram, and you would never have to go see a trainer if you are dedicated and you really work the right way, right?
Right.
To some degree. So there's the pressure's there, the demand is there, but also the information, and if you really want it, you can go get it. That's right. My mindset, and that's what I think players' mindset should be, is it's all there for you.
Right.
If you want to take advantage of it and, you know, use it to the fullest ability, like, you're going to be able to maximize your potential if you're working correctly.
100%. And even just on that note, how do you approach developing basketball IQ alongside physical skills in your training programs?
So I handle majority skill enhancements. So a lot of times, like, I'll have younger players that come to me, and I'm not going to worry about, like, the situations if they can't, like, you know, walk, talk, dribble, and function as just a basketball player. We're not going to work on too many game situations. So that's where it becomes a tricky part of, you know, players finding good programs that have right. coaches that understand the X's and O's
right.
And are holding them accountable to those things. When it comes to team practices and playing in games and understanding their roles and that type of thing. So when a player comes to me, I don't do too much of the game enhancement anymore. I used to, but there's so many things that players are missing when it comes to the skill side of the game that I want to make sure they get that. And then once they get to their program, you know, their coaches, they can take care of the X's and O's stuff. But I think that's where it also comes down to the players, is making sure you're watching games, you're studying film, you know, seeking the right coaches, right? So understanding what coaches are giving you, or different trainers are giving you. So if you come to me, you know what you're getting. If you go to the trainer down the street, you know what you're getting from them.
Right.
But really not, you know, settling for just one perspective, one way of doing something. There has to be a balance at some point. And, you know, my hope for every player is that, you know, they're finding a program where coaches are developing the X's and O's side of the game. And if not, try to find someone that does the game enhancement side really, really well. And that's something I'm trying to find in my area, at least, to kind of have another outlet where I can send players and I feel, you know, really confident in their ability to, you know, teach the game on that perspective, but, you know, also have a little bit of the skill side of the game as well, or really just someone that's continuing to try to grow their perspective of the game, because I think that's where a lot of the programs, a lot of the training can kind of go slightly wrong, is they're just kind of stuck in old ways, or
very
just unwilling to fully invest in, yes, you know, learning something that's brand new. Like, yes, when I started the IPT stuff, all that information was new, but I was so eager to learn it and understand it and make it my own.
Right.
And kind of just completely, like, step out of my comfort zone of what I thought I knew of the game.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to find coaches and surround yourself with people that are not satisfied with, you know, the championship they won last year, or the success they've had in the past, or how many players they've worked with that made it to high levels in the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Just finding someone that knows what they're doing, but also just continuing to improve and strengthen and evolve what they're doing,
right,
so that they can, you know, be most successful.
See, and what has it been like, Coach? Because I think for me, this moment, just in terms of reflecting on what basketball has meant to me, like, that didn't really kick in fully until during COVID, where literally everything was shut down. I had to stay at home, and it was like the itch to play basketball, to watch basketball, was heightened, especially when more so the physical element was taken away from me. And then it just brought back memories of the people that I've met till this day that I'm still close with, the journey, you know, just teaching, the highlights, the lowlights. It's been absolutely amazing just in terms of what basketball has meant to me. So for yourself, you know, do you get a time to reflect on where you started and how this round ball has just taken you so many places, opened so many doors, you've met so many people? Like, what does that timeline look like to you, Coach, when you kind of just take a moment to reflect.
Yeah, it's crazy. Once in a while, I have, you know, short opportunities to do so.
Nice.
It's you know, it you can get caught in the day-to-days, and it's always like one session down, get to the next session. But what really, you know, helps to slow me down is when I have, especially younger players, when I have younger players that will work with me for several months, and then all of a sudden overnight, you know, they look like a completely different player. So
yeah,
I think
that's what's up. Yeah.
That's one of the moments, you know, where I can kind of, I step back and realize, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing, especially. And then as I, you know, as time wears on, it just, it doesn't feel like it's been that long ago since I've actually played in a game, but it's been a while. So it kind of, you know, once in a while you'll get reminded, or once in a while you'll play pickup and you'll be like, oh man, like I, you know, when you play a game of basketball, no matter what, you know, what level with, you know, a packed gym or, you know, in front of a camp or something like that, you kind of are reminded of what it feels like just to go play the game of basketball. And it's, you know, I don't think there's anything much better for the soul than to have a good run or two.
100%. And just a final question, Coach, before we make a transition into what I like to call the quick hitter segment is, you know, as the game of basketball evolves, what do you see as the future trends in skill development and training?
That's a great question too. I think right now, and it's kind of been like this for a little while, I don't think we've even touched the surface of where the industry is heading. I think there's a lot to continue to, you know, as technology gets better and as film gets better and as some of these platforms in terms of training gets better, there's still a lot of growth. And I think there's still just a lot of education that is to be had so far. So,
right.
For example, there's a lot of people still in my area that haven't heard of me, but haven't heard of Impossible Training.
Oh, wow.
Or haven't heard of, or haven't heard of, you know, some of these other programs that are around.
Right.
So I think a lot of people, for one reason or the other, you know, still haven't gotten this information and are stuck in those kind of old school ways of thinking about the game, training the game. Cause I just think there's, you know, a bunch of information out there. You know, some people are kind of scared to kind of jump into that and stay with, you know, what they know.
Right.
So I think in the next several years, you're going to see a whole new wave of trainers, coaches, players that have, you know, been developing and have been studying through the lens of specifically what we do at Impossible, the skill enhancement world. You're going to see just a wave of players that are going to have a little bit, you know, more understanding of these concepts and how the game is played. And I think that's going to ultimately lead to, you know, more skill-driven coaches in the NBA. And you're going to need to have that level of understanding for you to keep up and continue to compete.
Understood. And just making a transition out into our quick hitter segment, I'm super curious, Coach, to get your answer on this first one. Is in terms of skill, what would you say is a skill that is taught by many but only mastered by a few?
Taught by many, mastered by a few. I would say the pull-up jump shot.
Ooh, okay. Why do you mean that? I think that might be a first on the podcast. Okay.
The pull-up jump shot. So there's a lot of ways that you can kind of pull up
right,
and transition and be ready to shoot that shot. But a lot of people only will teach it one way, and it'll be left, right, and they'll just watch and see, can a player do it? And can a player make that shot? And growing up and training it in my early career, I thought I was a master of the pull-up jump shot until I was exposed to all the details, the intricacies of being an effective pull-up jump shooter in the game in multiple situations. So you hear a lot about pull-ups and you hear a lot about getting your feet set, but it is definitely something that is mastered by very few still.
Understood. I like that one. The full-out jump shot. Okay. The next one, Coach, is the best piece of advice you ever received?
Best piece of advice I've ever received. That's good. That's good. There's just so much I've learned through I'm Possible.
Nice.
Sure.
Nice.
Kind of as a somewhat of a joke, but this has changed my training career. Two things rather. One is not having as a trainer, not having an agenda. So going into a set and not having a full, you know, minute by minute script. So I had that as a coach. I had that as a coach. I started that as a player or as a trainer, where I'd have, you know, 10, 15 things that I wanted to try to get through within a session and have them all timed out. But with that, you're left, you know, feeling unaccomplished, and you're also left, you know, rushing through things that where if you spend another 5-10 minutes on with the player, that might be the difference in them understanding it and getting it to,
very true.
You know, you're kind of moving on.
Right. No, that's something that even I'm still learning, because obviously, you know, being a coach, I plan how much time we're going to spend on certain things. But I think now I'm really starting to realize that even though it says I'm going to work on essay shooting for 15 minutes in this session, there could be a point where we're just specifically just recapping over the teacher points so that they really get it down before moving on to something else, you know. So that's a very good point, coach. Love that.
Yeah. And I know as a coach of a team, it can be a little bit different where you need to have some type of structure to get through some things.
Right. Right.
But it's just having that one, having the just feeling like you can be a little bit more fluid where you can kind of change if you need to, because there's going to be some days where you have a player or players that, you know, just aren't as loose or they're sore, whatever the case is. So you trying to get them to do something that they're just not prepped for, like there might be other ways to spend that time better. But then number two, that helps you become a better coach, because you have to become a master over your material and understanding like when and how and why you would choose to work on something.
Right. And for the final two, coach, is if it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have learned filling the blank about myself.
Can you read that one more time so I get the flow of that again?
I got you. So the question is, if it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have learned filling the blank about myself.
That I had to have the ability to push myself to another level.
Okay. I like that. And the final question before we transition and wrap up with the fourth quarter is, what would the title of your autobiography be?
Title of my autobiography. That's a great, great question, Demetrius. I like that one a lot. My title of my autobiography.
Take your time, coach, because even for me, when I ask myself that, it changes month to month. But yeah, like, just please feel free to take your time on this one.
Yeah, there's just a lot of different ways, a lot of different different topics or stuff you could really like kind of pull off of. But I would say, just in terms of where I'm at mentally and just like where my business is at, is right. I would probably go Chris Pappas, the ability to set your own pace.
Why do you mean that? I like that. Okay.
So I was 2018, I decided to do this full time. And in 2015, when I started my Instagram page, everything was hashtag set the pace. Just kind of something that I threw up there one time after a workout where, you know, we were in the weight room doing all kinds of crazy stuff, but it was just, you know, physically demanding, where like, right. I just wanted to essentially just kind of be, you know, set the pace in terms of, you know, outworking everybody. But then it also kind of goes back to me making the decision of leaving a full-time job, and jumping into this full-time in terms of just having my own, you know, schedule and having my own, or being my own boss, and really trying to grow something that, you know, I think is going to be bigger than myself at some point, if it's not already.
See, coach, you just inspired another thought now, like, and that's one thing I don't think the followers or the players or even people just looking from the outside in, some people don't realize the unseen grind of coaches, trainers. I mean, like you said, that was a pivotal moment, really, not even gambling on yourself, but just like taking a chance on yourself and investing in yourself, your thoughts, your ideas, your company, how you want to run certain things, how you want to teach. So just even on that moment, coach, let's just stay on that. Like, what is the unseen grind of Coach Chris Pappas?
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, worrying about everybody else that you have in your program. It's where you're worrying about making sure you're getting a hold of everybody, making sure everyone knows the schedule, making sure everybody is accounted for on a daily, weekly basis. And then it's also making sure that, you know, when players come to you, they're getting everything they possibly can out of it, and they are actually improving. And, you know, from a business perspective, you know, that they want to continue to come back and that they're, you know, hopefully buying into your program so that they can continue to be successful. But that also, you know, in turn, is vital to your business as well. So, you know, the basketball side of it is the easiest, the most fun part. But the struggle some days is, you know, making sure that you're focused on the basketball portion of the things, but also that business side is becoming even greater of importance to me, so that I can continue to grow and I can continue to do this as a full-time job, where, you know, at some point when I have kids and a family, that it'll be able to support it.
And I just know, man, that your future son Dora is going to have some tough handles. That's I could see that happening for sure. For sure. Oh,
that's the plan. That's the plan. If they love the game of basketball, then that will be the plan. But I'll let them decide that for sure.
Absolutely. Right. So, coach, what I do at the end of the podcast is I like to have a little bit of fun. So, what I like to do is I will give my guests 10 seconds and they need to name five things. So, for example, I might say, right, coach, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to name five shooting guards in the NBA. And usually when you hear this countdown,
10, 9,
that's when you could just start listening them
seven,
off. How does that
six,
sound?
Okay.
Five. Sounds good.
Good. Okay, bet. Let's get it. Okay. Now, the first two are quite easy. So, coach, you have got 10 seconds to name five NBA players.
10, 9.
We've got LeBron James,
eight,
Kevin Durant,
seven, six,
Trae Young.
Five,
we've got
four,
Jordan
three,
Poole and Steph Curry.
Two,
easy money.
One.
Easy money with 2 seconds left. Bet. Okay.
Some pressure, one. Man. Some pressure right there, man. That clock going down.
Next one, coach, is you've got 10 seconds to name five NBA teams.
Got the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Nine,
we have the Washington
eight,
Wizards,
seven,
the Golden State Warriors,
six,
LA Lakers,
five,
and the LA Clippers.
Four,
oh, Steven threw this. Okay, now, coach, I'm going to give you the heads up early. Guests in the past have found these two quite difficult because you do hear these names, but it's only during a certain part or time of the season. So let's see how you do with these next two. So you got 10 seconds to name five NBA coaches.
10, 9,
got Doc Rivers, Nick
eight,
Nurse,
seven,
Steve
six,
Kerr,
okay,
five, four,
Jason Kidd,
three,
and
yep,
Greg Popovich.
Let's get it, clutch. Oh my gosh, clutch.
Right on time.
Clutch. Okay.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of faces just kind of coming to your head. So you gotta figure out the names.
Right. Final few codes before we wrap up is you've got 10 seconds to name five international players in the NBA.
10.
Got Wembanyama, Luka Doncic.
Seven.
We've got
six,
Avija
five,
from the Wizards.
Three,
yep.
I believe he's
three,
on the Wizards.
Two,
we got Kristaps Porzingis.
Let's go.
And one more Luka. I think I said Luka already. Almost.
Nice. Top four. Solid. Solid. Now, these final two is a little bit more easier because it's really just down to personal preference. So for the final two, coach, 10 seconds to name five basketball movies.
10, 9.
For the love of the
eight,
game,
seven,
losers. There's a basketball
two,
love story with like
one.
Leonardo DiCaprio a long time ago.
Okay.
I can't remember. Yeah. That's a tough one.
And just the final.
Yeah, like
one,
Like
coach.
Mike.
Yep.
Like Mike. And what's another good basketball movie? We can end on that.
For sure. And just the final one, coach. Give me your top five players of all time.
10, 9.
Got Michael Jordan,
eight,
Steph Curry,
seven,
LeBron
six,
James.
Five,
gonna go Kevin Durant,
four,
and we're gonna
three,
go JJ Redick is my personal favorite.
Nice. Listeners, that is a wrap. He finished the game with a cool 10-15 point lead. He absolutely cleared that deck. We appreciate Coach Chris. And listeners, do not worry. All of the links will be in the description of this podcast. But Coach, for those who are listening, who just want to elevate their game, take their game to the next level, where can they find you?
You can check me out on Instagram, at Court Prowess. And then you can also catch me on Facebook. Feel free to hit me up at any time. I'd love to talk about the skill with you.
Absolutely. Listen, this is myself, Coach D, and the skills trainer at the high level, Coach Chris Puffer, signing out.